right now, every business should be ripping it down to the tacks and saying, okay, what should our team look like? What skills do we need to have? What should our tech look like? And I think doing that audit on your costs, what are you spending and on what should you be spending? And I think looking at the ROI of your different channels and what does it cost you to maintain those channels?
It's the E-commerce Master Plan podcast, here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome. It's great to have you here. Thank you for hitting play and choosing to listen to one of our inspiring guests. This is the second of our new format, the WWYD episode. Unique in that WWYD takes longer to say than what would you do, which it's short for. Anyway, these are the episodes where we invite one of our favourite people in e-commerce onto the show to share what they would do in a given situation. This time we've got regular guest Janice Thomas, no relation, back on the show to answer what would you do if growth at your e-commerce brand has stalled? Yes, big question, big one to be tackling. It's a great topic. We are going to be getting into so much stuff: cost savings, prioritization, goal setting, team management, culture. We'll also be talking about marketing channels. And those of you who know Janice will know she's been pretty much at the forefront of adopting AI within an e-commerce business. So I'll also be asking her about that as well. So make sure you listen to the end of the episode so you don't miss any of it. Plus, so you get to listen to Janice's top tips too.
Jetzt gibt's Cheez-It, ein neuer knuspriger Snack, der köstlich nach Käse schmeckt. Hol dir jetzt deine Packung im Handel und das Beste, du kannst sie einmal gratis testen. Wer will heute Abend den Cheez-It? Cheez-It, der Cheez-It. Jetzt zum gratis testen. Teilnahme ab 18 Jahren. Kauf- und Kassenbon-Upload bis 30. Juni erforderlich. Nur solange der Vorrat reicht. Teilnahmebedingungen auf Aktionspackungen und auf cheezit-aktion.de.
And now to introduce our special guest. Janice Thomas is an e-commerce and subscriptions expert, recently named in the top 100 UK marketing influencers list. Hello, Janice.
Hello, Chloe.
Awesome to have you back on the show, especially for our new format, What Would You Do?, which we will get into very shortly. But first of all, how have things been since we last caught up? Because it's been a couple of months.
It's been good. There is a lot of change going on, which I think is what we're going to be talking about today.
It is indeed. So I'll take that cue from you and let's get straight into it. So the what would you do you suggested was, if growth at your e-commerce brand has stalled, what would you do? So why did you pick this as your what would you do?
I think we're just in this period of change. I think particularly with AI coming in, kind of we need to revisit our processes. And I think for e-commerce brands in particular, there's a lot of people who scaled up and invested in certain things on the back of COVID, and they had this massive growth and they invested thinking that growth was going to continue. And in a lot of cases, it hasn't. So we've ended up with organizations that aren't fit for purpose. So I really wanted to say, look, if you're in this position, what do you do?
Because organizations got a bit bloated with that fast, some wrong decisions about things to add into the tech stack, team members to add, outlets to add potentially as well, and then channels to add. And then we were always worse at saying no and cutting out and cutting back than we should be. So good decisions at the time, bad decisions at the time, but we're left with that hangover now.
Absolutely.
So any criteria to this? Is this advice, you know, is this what would you do in a particularly large brand, a particularly small brand, a multi-channel brand, specific product sets, or is this relevant to anybody in the e-commerce space?
I think there's elements of this that's relevant to everyone. Like you might have the perfect team and skill set, but you might have a bloated tech stack. You know, I think there are different elements and different lenses that you could apply to whatever your business.
Cool. Because this is going to be looking at everything, isn't it? This isn't your growth has stalled, sort out your Facebook ads. We're going a bit deeper than that.
Yes.
Okay, so then what would you do if growth at your e-commerce brand has stalled? Where do you start?
Yeah, so I think particularly if you've got to that point and you've plateaued, chances are you've tried the easy things. You've tried iterating. And if you've got to the point where you're stuck, getting unstuck is going to be painful. So I think that's the first thing to acknowledge, that this is going to hurt to become unstuck. And you're probably almost going to have to go backwards a little bit to go forwards. But if you invest that time now, you're going to be able to grow much quicker long term. So I think right now, every business should be going, like ripping it down to the tacks and saying, okay, what should our team look like? What skills do we need to have? What should our tech look like? And I'm particularly, you know, while I've typically worked on Magento sites, I know a lot of people on Shopify, because if you've got the app environment, it's really easy to like add this app and add that app. And I liken it to, and all websites, not just Shopify, it becomes like an overstuffed handbag that you kind of have to tip it out and start all again. And I think that's the philosophy that organizations need to go through from both a team and a tech perspective, is like, what do we actually need? And I think doing that audit on your costs, what are you spending and on what should you be spending? And I think looking at the ROI of your different channels and what does it cost you to maintain those channels? And I think particularly with the changes in Meta and Google, that you need a lot more assets, you need a lot more data. And some things it's like, well, is this actually bringing in incremental value? And, you know, I'm not saying, you know, switch it off if you're spending millions of pounds a year on PPC, but, you know, if you're only spending a few grand a month, then why not pause it for a few months and see what happens? Is it actually bringing the incrementality that you think it is? And I think that is the main thing, is like, do you know what? You really have to have a hard lens and say, what do you need? And you look at the team skills in particular, like you think of design, like you used to put a brief out to a number of agencies. They would come and pitch. There would be this big creative idea that would then run for months or even years. And we just don't work in that environment anymore. It's, you know, experiment, it's try things, it's do it quick and dirty. And do you have people who are able to do that? The same with, you know, processes and analysis and reporting and things like that. What happens to these things? Are these, you know, reports being used to actually drive decisions? Is that useful to people in their day-to-day job? It's a hard lens to put things through, but almost everything you do in the business, you need to be saying, should we be doing this? Because the reason that you've plateaued is you'll keep doing the same thing in the same way. The only way you're going to get out of that cycle is to say, stop, should we be doing this? What should we be doing? I think if you can slim things down, there's a temptation to spend as much as you can to break even, presuming that, you know, free, easy investment is not on the table as in the way it was pre-COVID. You've got to fund from your existing business. So if you're just ticking on along around the break-even point, it's very difficult to take bigger risks and make bigger investments. You all have to bring your cost base down a bit so that you've got a decent amount of cash in the bank to play around and say, actually, let's do things differently. Otherwise, you're going to be stuck in the cycle of doing the same thing.
Oh, loads of juicy stuff for us to get into there, Janice. First one for me would be, you know, this is kind of like the polar opposite of what I end every one of these episodes with, words keep optimizing. We're not doing little optimizations. We are, I guess, almost going back to kind of like zero-based accounting. You're starting blank sheet of paper, aren't you? And going, actually, for what we know about our customers and what we know about what's working at the moment, what do we actually need, ripping it down and building it back up again?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then timing-wise, this one, everyone, you're hearing this at the end of October, which may seem like exactly the time you don't want to start doing this, but many a retailer, I know most of you have, you know, almost calendar year, financial years on the go, and you're kind of committed to what's going to happen for the next 2 months, but January is a wide open field of opportunity. So actually, sorry, everybody, now is the time to be plotting, isn't it? I would say, Janice, would you agree? November, December are a good time to start working on this?
Absolutely. I think that November and December, you've got such high expectations of what will happen that actually taking a really hard lens on, well, if it didn't happen, why didn't it happen? And what could we have done differently? It's almost the perfect opportunity to put that hard lens in place and make those difficult decisions. Because if you don't have an amazing November and December, it's only going to get worse into next year. And maybe you did have a strong November and December. What can you learn? What did you do? Because you probably, if you did have a strong November and December, you probably had to be agile. You probably had to change your plan than what you had in place, and you evolved to take advantage of opportunities as they came along. How did you do it? I think that's the other thing, that so many organizations in COVID were able to make those difficult decisions and did almost go back to that blank sheet of paper and say, what staff do we need? You know, what should we be doing? Where's the focus? And going back to that COVID mindset again, how did we do that? And almost doing that again.
It's like, it was exhausting, but it was hugely creative and innovative time for many businesses. Everything changed crazy fast, uncomfortably fast, but we reacted up. Now we need to not react down, but react back in line with where we should be. You've talked about cutting costs in order to have better cash flow, and you've talked about optimizing marketing channels. Can you do those two at the same time? Or is it more, you know, we need to, first of all, we need to cut back. So then we've got the resources starting to come in to enable us to do the new experimentations and to make the addition changes. Because we're not entirely talking about cutting back. We're talking about adding some new stuff in as well.
Absolutely. And I think part of this process is of prioritization. You're like, what is going to have the most impact the most quickly? Because this is not going to be something you can just do in a month and it's sorted. This is going to be a long program of change, and it's working out where you can see the most impact quickly. And that might be, do you know what? Let's switch off this channel. Let's audit our tech stack. Whatever it might be, what can we do quickly that starts to put us in that better position? And I think making people focus on the right things, it's not necessarily like, oh, we need to cut staff, but actually, are staff doing things that they shouldn't, or don't add value? Like, are they spending, you know, how much time are they spending on reporting, on admin and all of those things? So actually, by taking that layer out, it's almost like you've got free staff members, because you've automated those processes. You then can invest their time. So that becomes like, time is a resource that is potentially at break even, and you can move it to profit as well as actual costs.
I think in the e-commerce space or the retail head office space, this is not, what I'm about to say has no shade to be placed on in-store teams, okay? Very much not. This is not about in-store teams. This is about head office staff sitting at their desks in the e-commerce and the retail channels. We are horrendous in this industry at valuing time. Absolutely horrendous at it. You just have to look at the people who are doing, you know, long-winded, complicated reports every Monday, which could have been automated, but it would have cost $20 a month to buy the software that would automate it. We are so shocking at time, aren't we? I would go so far as to suggest everyone starts filling in timesheets. Would you go that far, Janice? Or would you do it anecdotally?
I think it depends on the size of your organisation. I think a big organisation, you have to go through that because that's the only way you're going to get enough data to make these decisions. In a smaller organisation, you can do it in a more informal brainstorming session. You know, like, for example, I recently had one of my team going on maternity leave and it made us think, right, what does she do? How does she spend her time? And who should take over what? And is that something we should continue to do while she's on maternity leave?
Which, it's interesting, isn't it? Like, a lot of this, you talked about the need for prioritisation, but also the need to make fast changes. You know, so ideally we gather all the data, weigh up all the opportunities, and then do a lovely big old project plan. But you've got to be fast and you've got to be data focused. So there's kind of like, there's an element that has to be done initially on gut feel. But then there's also a big old element of data gather and analysis. It's like two competing methods, but both in the same project in some ways, in my head anyway.
Yeah, and I think almost part of it is getting those quick wins and making the business case for that wider investment of doing it in more detail and, you know, in more depth and properly planned out. But you've kind of got to experiment to find out, well, what is going to make a difference? It's like, oh, we think by automating our reporting, it's going to free up, you know, X hours a day for everyone. And does it actually do that? Does that then have the impact that we think it will on the business? What? And asking people, what would you do if you had the time? Like, you would be surprised at the projects that people want to be working on but don't currently have the time to do. So it's no good just saying, oh, you know, we've saved all this time, because tasks will expand to fill the time available. And I think particularly, you know, I worked a long time in marketing and e-com, and I think there's a tendency towards perfectionism. It was like, oh, if I've got more time to do that deck, then I'm going to make it look even better. Whereas, like, if I've only got 2 hours to do the deck, then it's going to be what it's going to be. So I think putting that expectation in place, not just, oh, you can save time, but what's the project you want to work on with that free time?
Yeah, it's very easy to go, we saved a load of hours, but we haven't actually spent them on anything worthwhile. I'd liked one of the other points you made a little earlier when you were talking about prioritisation and making a quick win, which was that you need to get everyone aligned around the goal, which I think when you're doing these fast moving projects and you're asking people for their opinions and you're asking teams to get involved, you have to have that clarity of goal, which means you kind of have to go, actually, no, do you? Do you, Janice? Do you need to go more in depth with what the goal is than we need to reignite growth? Is that good enough goal, or do we need more detail?
I think you need an inspiring goal that is going to get people on board, because I think the only way this works is if everyone is looking at everything that they do and they have to be on board with this. They can't be like, oh, well, if I do this, you know, I'm going to be made redundant, my job's going to be taken by AI. You're never going to get anyone on board with that. But if you say, we want to build the company of the future, this is a vision of what our company is going to be, it's going to be efficient. We're not going to waste time on admin. We want you to focus on the things that you're good at and that you enjoy. And all of these things, I think you need an inspiring vision for people to buy into, rather than just, we want to make more money, we want to start growing again. Where's the emotional investment in that?
It's not, we need to cut 20% of costs, because that's enough to send fear through everybody. So given that this is also something you're not going to kick off amongst the, you know, within the business with an email, is it? So would you do an hour-long team meeting, do an away day, half a day, something with pizza? How would you launch this to get the best understanding from the team so they're not 10 minutes later standing by the water cooler going, wow, they're going to make us all redundant, aren't they? Which is the worst outcome you could end up with.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in regular team meetings. And one of the things I like to do at regular team meetings is set people with a challenge. it might be go experiment with AI this month and come back and share what you've learned, what you tried, what worked, what didn't work. It might be we want to improve our product pages. Go find examples of brands that you like that think do the product page well, and why do they do that? And I think breaking this down into bite-sized challenges that everyone can go away and come with their own opinions and feel like those opinions are valid and listened to. And also, you know, most organizations, why do you want to spend somebody's time looking at what somebody else does when you can have that person share what they do, how they do it, how they think that they can improve it? And that person's going to be on board with those changes rather than someone imposing them on them.
I love that, because then you're also creating a culture that helps deal with such problems in the past. You know, it's a lot easier if you've been doing that sort of thing already, then it's a lot easier to embark on this than if it's been, oh, they're doing their secret squirrel thing again, you know, the bosses are doing their thing and we won't get told anything. If you're in that scenario, this is an awful lot harder to do. So would you, in that example, would you kind of drip feed it to the team, or would you do a big reveal to kick things off?
I think that there's good to have a, you know, big conversation, but setting people's expectations about what sort of things you're going to, you know, ask them. I think, you know, getting everyone involved is really useful for example, who in the business is using these tools? Are you using it? Are you dependent on it? You know, like all of these things that you've ended up, that you've subscribed to, you know, with ongoing, you know, recurring billing, and like who is actually using them and how many people are using them and how much are they using them? And is this the best tool for what they're using it for? If only three people find it really useful, is there something else that those three people could be used? If everyone uses it, well, clearly this is the tool that we should be investing in.
Like a user account amnesty. I'm sure that would save everybody a lot of money. Not a bad one to do week one.
Yeah, I've done that with like recurring costs as well. Is like, you know, sit everyone in the marketing team down and be like, what is this cost? And like line by line, I'm like, oh no, that was that software that we signed up for that project 3 years ago and we're still paying for.
Yeah, or Lindsay, who left 3 years ago, was to do with that one.
Yeah.
And then you really love the fact you have an accounts team, because they can go and chase it all down for you and work out how to cancel. Cool. Anything else we should do if growth at the e-commerce brand has stalled? Anything else you'd add in?
I think it's, again, going back to basics, like really understanding, why do you exist? Why are you in business? Why should customers buy your products? That focus, I think, helps this whole process. It's like, well, why, you know, what do we do and what do we not do? And I think the whole exercise is about focus and what should we be doing. And I think brand is a really important part of it. And I think particularly as you are using potentially AI tools for creative development, being really clear what the brand is, who it is for, all of those things, and having that as an input into prompts and processes and all of those things, and everyone is consistent about what they're saying and all of those things, means that you're going to get more consistent outputs. And I think that's an exercise, even if you're a massively growing brand that has no issues around growth, you should be doing right now is aligning, what are you saying about your team? What prompts are you using? Because if you've got 12 different people, you know, in 10 different teams, you know, all using different prompts, then you're going to end up with misalignment. So I think being really clear about what your brand is, why you exist, what you stand for, is an exercise everyone should be doing right now.
It's interesting, isn't it? I seem to get involved in a lot of conversations about them at the moment that can be summarized as garbage in, garbage out. And usually in e-commerce, they are down to product data, which powers so much of the AI activity on product data and tracking data on ads, on emails, on the website, in geo, and all that kind of stuff. But not so many people are talking about the in head office use of AI and the way that, as you've just eloquently explained, can be garbage in, garbage out. And you can quite quickly lose track of things if you don't have that DNA at the core of things. This, you know, all projects are easier if you have business DNA of this is who we serve, this is why we do it, and everything else. Everyone, Janice was nodding very enthusiastically. I know you guys can't see it. She's nodding very enthusiastically by that. So I'm not going to bother to ask her to comment on that because she clearly agrees. But what I am going to ask is, Janice, I know you've been probably one of the retailers at the forefront of embracing AI in the business without doing it stupidly. I had that caveat because there's some who've gone all the way and it's a really terrible idea. How have you found it's helped bring in efficiency and help build growth? Where, I guess what I'm trying to say is, for the benefit of the listeners, where are key places to start building it into the business to gain success, not to gain confusion and problems?
Yeah, I mean, I think particularly from a marketing point of view, in terms of creative outputs, whether that is, you know, product page copy or press releases or ad imagery or all of those things, it can be amazing. But you have to invest in, you can't just give it, you know, say, oh, produce an ad for this. You have to be like, well, this is our visual, you know, this is our tone of voice. This is examples of what is good and what is bad. And as you say, if the product data isn't there, then it can only build with what you've got. So I think it is great at particularly the creative production side, but you need the foundation to underpin it. Otherwise, you're just going to get really generic stuff. And that's what the kind of AI brush gets tarred with is, well, no, if you haven't told it about your brand and your customer and, you know, your tone of voice and given examples of what does good look like and, you know, all of that stuff, if you're not setting the tone correctly, and then you're not refining it, what comes out, you're like, no, that's wrong because we don't use blue. That's wrong because we don't use that language. That's too, you know, generic. There's no spark. There's no tone to it. You know, that needs to be more bullet points. You need to kind of feed back. I was at an event last week where somebody was talking about, they were a fashion retailer, and they're talking about using AI design tools. And they were saying an experienced designer using one of those was giving a really specific brief with a good understanding. And then the tweaks that they were making to the output were outstanding. So what an experienced designer was able to do with that tool versus a layperson was, you know, night and day. And I think that it's very easy for us to think it's like, just like, oh, AI is going to give us the answer. It's like, no, you have to have the experience and the understanding and invest in teaching it to get the outputs that you want.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are.
Jetzt gibt's Cheez-It, ein neuer knuspriger Snack, der köstlich nach Käse schmeckt. Hol dir jetzt deine Packung im Handel und das Beste, du kannst sie einmal gratis testen. Wer will heute Abend den Cheez-It? Cheez-It, der Cheez-It. Jetzt zum Gratis-Testen. Teilnahme ab 18 Jahren. Kauf- und Kassenbon-Upload bis 30. Juni erforderlich. Nur solange der Vorrat reicht. Teilnahmebedingungen auf Aktionspackungen und auf cheez-it-aktion.de.
It's time for the Top Tips Round.
I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. Janice, are you ready for the top tips?
I am.
Awesome. Book top tip first up. Then, if everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off to read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
In this context, it would have to be Adam Grant's Think Again, which is all about the assumptions that we make and the decision-making processes that we use that don't serve us and all of those things. I think it's the absolutely perfect book to read before embarking on this project.
Nice. Okay, the traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
I think I'm going to be counterintuitive. I think increasingly it's not about traffic. That I think more and more user journeys are going to take place off your website, whether that's LLMs and GEO or YouTube or Meta or any of those things. I think we all need to get a lot less hung up about traffic and actually about how do we communicate clearly with our customers wherever they are.
Nice, which comes back to great product data, clear DNA, and all of those great things. The tool top tip, maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
I think one of the things I'm finding really useful is understanding how to structure a prompt to get the output that you want, that telling it like, right, who are you? What are you trying to achieve? What does the output look like? What process do you want it to go through? And I think for me, thinking about how do you not just like do this task, and then giving it examples of what good looks like thinking about, or actually what does a good prompt structure look like, I think is something that I'm evolving at the moment. I'm finding really useful.
It is quite impressive that there are now tools to help you write the prompt. it's like we've almost gone full circle now.
But you've got to have the answers. And I think this is the bit that people are trying to skip. It's like, actually, you have to feed it with really good quality stuff. You've got to feed it with really good quality examples. You've got to feed it with all that data. You can't just expect it to make it up, because it will.
Yeah, and then you'll pay the price. Okay, the carbon top tip. What's your favorite way to reduce the carbon footprint of an e-commerce store?
I think it's all about what we've been talking today. It's about focus. If you think about how much time and resource is wasted in every organization, this is the exercise that we should all be going through right now to reduce our carbon footprint.
It is as simple as that, isn't it? Carbon footprint reduction is waste reduction, and focusing and knowing what you're doing will reduce your carbon footprint. I love that as an answer. That is perfect, Janice. 10 out of 10. Janice, before we say goodbye, could you please let the listeners know where they can find you and get in contact if they want to chat with you?
Yeah, please get in touch with me on LinkedIn. I'm Janice Thomas, and that's J-A-N-I-S.
Simple as that, everybody. Janice, thank you so much for being on the E-commerce Masterplan podcast and for being so generous sharing your experience with us. It's always a pleasure to catch up with you.
Thank you for having me, Chloe.
Brilliant insights there from Janice. So if you are looking at restoring the growth of your e-commerce business, then it's not about playing around with the marketing. It's time, given COVID and all the AI changes and all the rest of it, it is time to rip it up and start again. Metaphorically speaking, of course, get out that blank sheet of paper, work out where you should be going, involve your team in the process, take them along for the ride, make it inspiring and exciting, see what untapped resources you've got in the business, cut those unnecessary costs, and get really good at prioritization with that clear goal. And as we talked about again and again, get the DNA and the building blocks right in the business, the vision, the values, who your target customer is, the product data. It will make what is quite clearly coming down the road for us so much easier to deal with if you've got all that right. You can get your hands on our notes of this episode, including those top tips and links to the things we mentioned, by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com. You could also use our direct episode short links. Just put ecmp.info/the number of this episode into the URL bar, and you'll be redirected straight to the right episode page. When you get to the website, you can also add yourself to our email list so you don't miss out on any of the other things I share to help you improve your business. And if you like this episode, then why not go back and have a listen to episode 561, which is our very first What Would You Do? A what would you do if you were to take over an e-commerce business in the 10 to 25 million range. And you can find all our What Would You Do's at ecmp.info/WWYD. Thank you for tuning into this and every episode of the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I bring you a new interview every week to inspire and help people like you to succeed and thrive with your businesses, including progressing along the path to net zero. So if you know someone this show can help, please tell them to listen to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. I hope you have a great week, and don't forget to keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Master Plan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.